Thomas Lux is our guest here at the Commerce Club. Bill Russell and I are delighted to be with you. You talk about the ear, but I see that look from Bill Russell that it's his turn to talk.
Not necessarily. I first came across this underground, to me, underground poetry notion with Erica Jong. We did a program years ago, and 4 or 5 years ago, and she had a new book out, and she was...
all of us know Erica Jong for Fear of Flying in the 60s and 70s.
Her first book was a book of poems called Fruits and Vegetables, published, I believe, in the early 70s.
And she defines herself as a poet. Yeah,
well, and she was just aggressive on the subject of poetry, and I said, poetry? You know, you're a successful writer, you sell millions of books, and you want to talk about poetry? And that set her off. but it was the first time I'd come across somebody that really cared that much, that had a successful career and was still more interested in their work as a poet. And she also was talking about the number of people that were involved in it around the country. And at that time, it was just completely below the radar screen.
For us.
And I think for most people, and we still to this day, when I tell people that there is a poet that has an endowed chair at Georgia Tech, they look at they look at me skeptically, then they laugh, then they do a triple take, and they say, really? And it still seems to be, and the public, the general media, it just doesn't show up. It's still not there. And yet there seem to be, hundreds of thousands, presumably millions of people that are either writing poetry or going to events.
Yeah. Well, it is happening all over the place in numbers that it didn't happen before. Partly, it's National Public Radio. Certain poets like Billy Collins, for example, who just finished a term as Poet Laureate of the United States, gathered a huge audience from reading his poems on NPR. There are just venues that never used to be before. There's all sorts of stuff on the internet now, too, poetry stuff on the internet. It's just all over the place. Still, it's not one of the popular arts. It never will be like music or any of the movies or something like that. But the audience is definitely much, much larger. It's still tiny, but it's comparatively, but it's much larger than it used to be.
When you talk about the voice, when you talk about this peculiar and wonderful thing between the writer and the reader, part of the magic of this is you don't even have to have a reader, right?
Well, you don't write assuming that somebody's going to read it. You hope that somebody is going to read it. And it would be pretty sad if nobody ever did, you hope to have a reader. But poets write because they have to write, and anything that happens after that, readers or whatever, is just gravy. People write because they love to write, they have to write. Anything after that is just a bonus, anything you get back from it.
And what you get back from it. You talk about the great American poets. One of your many poems is about dropping Walt Whitman's brain on the floor. And the everydayness of a lot of the things that you talk about. As you say, I came up in poetry when it got arcane and inaccessible and not pretty.
Right.
Is this a gift you have, or is this part of what is happening?
I think it's part of what's happening. People they want to be, a lot of poets want to be understood now. I can't imagine a poet who wouldn't want to be understood, but there are plenty of poets who simply don't care, or they want you to believe that their obscurity is a sign of genius. Most often what we take for obscurity in a lot of contemporary poetry is not obscurity, because obscurity often will yield if you work at it. It's simply arbitrary. It's simply a poet sitting down and kind of free associating, putting it down on the page and calling it a poem. There's still a lot of that kind of poetry, a very dry, cold, intellectual, I find incredibly tedious, but there's more and more exciting, vital, original poetry meant to be read out loud, meant for the human voice, etc.
We've talked about the poet's role in this, but it would also seem that the audience is a big piece of this, that, you know, something may have changed in the environment that makes poetry more appealing. And a lot of the work you do is reaching out to people to, like us, to people who are somewhere between indifferent and hostile to poetry. What are the changes? Can you sort of get your hand around that? Or
I think it's a kind of spiritual need, almost a need to make some kind of human connection without all of the paraphernalia, the electronics. I think that's it as much as anything. And then since 9/11 fostered an even greater burst of interest in poetry, because poetry does have the ability to offer solace and insight and heal and things like that. Poetry can do that. So there's been a spike in the interest in poetry since 9/11 even. But I think it's a kind of longing for something human that we want, some kind of human connections that we're missing in modern culture.
One of the things that I have found charming as you've invited us into various things at Georgia Tech is that a lot of the people who read poetry, you know, you bring in official poets, but a lot of the people aren't poets, they're people who do poetry. Is there a difference?
I don't know. I mean, nobody's going to be able to evaluate what is good and what is not good for a really long time anyway. A writer's life as a writer doesn't really begin until their obituary is published. So I don't know.
I've been really thrilled to be hearing people like the folks who funded the chair that you hold, who are industrialists and who are engineers and who are pharmacists and housewives, people who don't think of themselves first and foremost as poets. Isn't that some of what you're doing in the community?
Sure. I mean, Robert Frost said the word poet is a praise word, and he didn't even like to call himself a poet. If somebody wanted to call him that, that would be okay with him. But it's not a word that you throw around lightly, he believed, and I believe that too. But there's millions of people, thousands anyway, coming to poetry as adults. So that's another one of the phenomena that's happening, is that a lot of this revival in poetry is happening with adults. Poetry coming to people coming to poetry in their 40s, 50s, 60s even. You see this kind of student particularly in summer writing programs, but you also see them in graduate programs all over the country. People who in a way have been writing their whole lives but actually haven't been writing. They've been living and walking around on earth with their eyes and their ears and their brains open, and get to a certain point in life and they want to start writing. Maybe they've had a successful career in something else, their kids are grown, they have a little money, and they want to do something for their souls. I know many writers in recent years who I've worked with as adults who are, you know, publishing books and publishing poems all over the place, but not starting writing until they're in their 40s or 50s or even older.
So there's hope for us.
There's hope for anybody who wants to, who cares about it. It is an art form and a craft, and there's a great deal to learn about it. And the whole point is taking any kind of classes to try to figure out how to get better at this, but not getting better for expecting something back. Getting better simply because it's important to have good poems. It's important. It doesn't even matter who writes them. I'm paraphrasing Ezra Pound. It's just immensely important that we have great poems. It does not matter who writes them.
Thomas Lux writes poems and invites other people to do so in his role as teacher, as well as being known around the world for his own poems. We will continue with him, Bill Russell, and I invite you to be with us when we return in just a moment for the Paula Gordon Show.